Hi, this is Tatum, and I'm going to podcast on Chapter 38, which is entitled Family-Centered Care of the Child During Illness and Hospitalization. I am going to just kind of highlight some of the most important concepts in this chapter, so I will skip around a little bit, and hopefully I will tell you the slide that I'm on so you guys can follow along. So if you want to take out your PowerPoint, I'm going to start with slide number 2, which talks about separation anxiety. So separation anxiety is something that all children might encounter if they're ever hospitalized. It's a period of uncertainty. It can be very terrifying for a lot of children if they ever have to be in the hospital, and they do not want to be away from their parents. So we want to try to limit or minimize that separation from their parents as much as possible. But there are different phases of separation anxiety, and I really would like you guys to understand all the different phases of separation anxiety and just be able to explain what it is and just how a child processes through each of those phases. So that first phase is the protest phase of separation anxiety, and this is when the child is very, very aggressive. And so they may cry and scream, they may cling to their parent, they may refuse attention from anyone else. They're inconsolable at this point in time. They just absolutely do not want to be separated from their mom or their father. So, things that you might see would be maybe hitting, kicking, pinching of a stranger if they try to forcibly take that child away. Other things that you might see, and you guys can use the box on page 1110 of your textbook. There's a box 38-1 that talks about the signs and symptoms of separation anxiety. If you look at stage of protest, it actually lists the different behaviors that could be encountered during that phase. So we talked about crying and screaming. The child may search for their parents with their eyes. They cling to their parents. They avoid and reject contact with strangers. They may verbally attack strangers, telling them to go away. They may physically attack strangers by kicking, hitting, pinching them. They may try to escape to find their parent. Any attempts made to the parent are really just trying to force them to stay with that child. Behaviors may last anywhere from hours to days. And again, protests such as crying can be continuous, ceasing only with physical exhaustion. So it is a very long stage that may be encountered. And this is something that a lot of children will process through. That second phase is the despair phase. And this is when crying stops, but the child is very, very depressed and withdrawn. They're not engaged in the environment. They don't want to play. They may have problems with eating and drinking as well. Again, some of the behaviors that you might see, referring to box 38-1, is again, not communicating, depressed and sad, withdrawing. They may even regress to earlier behaviors, such as thumb sucking. They may wet the bed, even though they're potty trained. They may use a pacifier now, or even use a bottle. And this is usually temporary in nature. It's just a way to cope with the stress that they're undergoing. So it's important to reassure parents that these behaviors are temporary in nature. And then that third stage is that detachment phase. They're not content, but they're trying to move on a little bit. So they may actually try to form new relationships with other children, but they're very superficial. They may also start to interact with other caregivers. They show some interest into their surroundings now, but again, this is just a form of coping for the child, just to help them deal with that loss or that pain of not seeing their parent. this stage isn't very common in hospitalized children. It's actually pretty rare. A lot of times they don't progress to the stage of detachment, but just know that the stage of detachment is there, and it does represent a superficial adjustment to that loss, which would be loss of seeing their parent. So those are the different stages of separation anxiety. And again, I really do want you guys to understand these stages. So if we move on, you look at slide 3. Slide 3, you can see this little boy not being happy that he is being taken from his mother. This would be an example of the protest phase. So he could be crying or screaming. He's searching for his mom here, and he really doesn't want to go to that other lady. So again, just another example of the protest phase. If you move on and look at slide 4, this is an example of the despair phase or stage of separation anxiety. So again, this little boy looks so sad and lonely and depressed. It looks like he is attempting to play, but he's really not communicating with anybody. Again, this is that despair phase, which is that second stage or phase of separation anxiety. If you look at slide 5, you can see this little girl in her mommy's lap, and she just looks sad and withdrawn too. And this just is an example that some children may even appear sad in the presence of their parents. So there's lots of different factors that really affect the emotional stability of children when they're hospitalized. Moving on to slide 6, separation anxiety in early childhood. We really try to avoid separation from the child, from their parents, if possible. A lot of times, if it can be avoided, they can be pretty resilient and withstand a lot of other stressors in place. So it's important to be an advocate for their child and make sure that mom and dad are comfortable in their hospital room, make sure they have a bed or they have chairs, and just really keep them involved in the child's plan of care. In preschool children, if they are not prepped or prepared in any sort of way to be in the hospital, they may see a hospitalization as a form of punishment. So it's really important to explain things to the child in simple terms and really tell them it's not their fault that they're in the hospital, because a lot of younger children, especially preschool age, will see it as something that they did wrong. So it's important to reinforce that. As far as separation anxiety in late childhood and adolescence, the family doesn't play a huge role once that child gets older, but their peer group does. So a lot of adolescents, they don't necessarily, yes, they miss their family, but they're more just kind of centered around the loss of their peer group if they're not around their peer group for an extended period of time. So they fear that separation from their friends, as well as an unfamiliar environment. And also they do fear that separation from their family, but that's not the most strain, I guess, in their life. It's just that separation from that peer group is that strain. Moving on to slide 7, talks about the effects of hospitalization on the child. There are lots of different factors that play into this. Effects can be seen before admission, during hospitalization, or even after discharge. The child's concept of illness is more important than intellectual maturity in predicting anxiety, and the child may or may not be affected by previous hospitalizations. Again, we do have to talk about regression. So some of those regressive behaviors may actually be seen, especially in younger children. So again, if they're potty trained, they may start wetting the bed. They may revert back to thumb sucking or using a pacifier. And again, just explain to mom and dad that these behaviors are pretty temporary. Moving on now to slide 11, talks about stressors and reactions of the family. And the first part talks about just some of the general themes that parents undergo or reactions that the parents undergo. And they may feel helpless. They may question nursing staff about their skills. They may try to accept the reality of the hospitalization. They try to deal with just fear and that uncertainty. They try to cope with uncertainty, and they try to seek reassurance from caregivers as well. Just explain the plan of care to the parents, explain procedures in the most simplest ways so that they understand and can be involved in that child's plan of care. That will help empower them, and it will help give them a sense of control. Moving on to slide 12, it talks about sibling reactions. And so siblings can experience many different emotions. They can experience loneliness, fear, worry. They may go through a period of anger or resentment for their sibling. They may feel guilty because they have these wide range of emotions. So it's important just to keep that child or that sibling kind of up to date about what is happening to their loved one. They may experience many changes in being too young to understand them. They may be being cared for non-relatives, or they may be placed outside their home, so their life has changed and turned upside down. They may receive little information about their ill brother or sister, which is really hard for them to comprehend. They're not sure what's going on, and they feel like they lack control in the situation. And they may perceive that their parents will treat the sick child differently. Maybe they feel that their parents are giving the sick child preferential treatment. So those are the things that we really have to be considerate of and be really sensitive to. It's really important to encourage the parents to include other family members into the sick child's plan of care, keep them informed of what's going on. Praise their other children, be grateful for the things that they're doing around the house, or if they're helping with other siblings, be grateful for that. Maybe giving them special privileges as well to help them cope with this uncertainty and just having their life turned upside down. So those are some of the things to kind of educate and be mindful of when we're dealing with siblings. All right, moving on to slide 13, it talks about preparation for hospitalization. It's really important to help decrease fear and anxiety in the family as well as the sick child by just really explaining the routine of the unit, allow them time for questions. We have to prepare the child for admission, so this is when we would get their history, assess their usual health habits, question their activities of daily living. What type of support that they have as well, their support systems. They may need certain procedures done right away, like blood draws or x-rays or a physical exam, and just, explain what you're going to do and when and how long these procedures might take. And just, again, give them time to process what might happen, I guess, as they go about their time in the hospital. We also want to prevent or minimize separation, especially in children younger than 5. Again, family-centered care is first and foremost, so make that family involved in the child's plan of care. As nurses, we have to be the family's advocate. So again, provide a sense of presence to help minimize that anxiety that the family might experience, explain things, and again, get a chair or a bed for mom and dad so they can sleep in that hospital room with their child. If we do these things, we're going to empower the family and hopefully give them a sense of control. Prevent or minimize parental absence. If the parents have to leave, it's really important to the child to have a favorite toy or blanket in the hospital room with them. This just kind of is comforting for them. It helps decrease the need for restraints. if you need to do your assessment and the child is sitting on the mom's lap, you can go ahead and do your assessment on the mom's lap, assessment of the child on the mom's lap. And that's just going to help increase that trust and really establish that rapport with all the family members. Maintaining the child's freedom as well as their routine is really important. Obviously, we want to work around their usual schedule at home. We want to basically make sure that their routine is not interrupted. So structured routines is really important. So planning out the day, what their day is going to look like, telling them what time certain procedures might be done or when physical therapy might be working with them is really key. We don't want them to watch a lot of TV during the day and then not go to bed at night. We also want to encourage independence, so encouraging self-cares is important. We want them to be themselves, so we don't want them to have to wear a hospital gown. They can wear their own clothes, they can make their own food choices if appropriate. Maybe they would feel better if they were rooming with a child of the same age, so they feel like they are getting some socialization, I guess, in the hospital. So give them some freedom as well. All right, moving on to slide 15. This is just an example of kind of a daily schedule. So again, this is very structured. So establish that routine. When a routine is interrupted, it can increase anxiety. And again, when we go off track of this routine, sometimes the child will be doing things like watching TV way too much and then not being able to sleep at night. And that's interfering with their health status and their recovery period. So, establishing a very structured time frame of just different activities is important. Also, diversional activities like for young children, toys. Making sure that they have appropriate developmental toys on hand can help during that hospitalization. Toys are very comforting in the hospital environment. One thing that I wanted to point out, which is kind of important, are playrooms. Playrooms in the hospital help distance the child from their illness, from hospitalization. It's more like a safe haven for them. So, it's a place for them to freely play without any interruptions, without any medical procedures. And it really enhances their play. It gives them a time then to release any anger, disappointment, fear during their play. And a lot of times they're pretty expressive in their feelings through drawing and painting. And that provides them a great way to express their feelings about their hospitalization. So having a playroom freely designated to the child or other children on the unit where there are no interruptions, it's a safe place for them where they feel like they can express their feelings about their situation is so important. We never want to interrupt their play with certain medical procedures like a blood draw or a lumbar puncture. We want to make sure that we give them time to play and that if they have a procedure coming up, that we tell them that they're allowed to play for maybe a half hour longer and then we have to go to another place in the hospital where a procedure will take place, but we never want to interrupt the playroom with medical procedures. All right, so that concludes my podcast on chapter 38. Again, I highlighted some of the most important things that I want you to know about this chapter. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. Thanks so much.